Welcome to the Penguin Magic Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Tate. We have a great show for you this week. The main event is one of my favorite comedy magicians and one of the stars of the new show, Mad Apple, on the Las Vegas Strip. Harrison Greenbaum is my guest. We get an insight into this new show, what he's doing in it, and where not to put your arms so they aren't ripped off by a giant piece of machinery. Nick LaCapo joins me to discuss the featured part of the week from Roberto Joby. But before all of that, we kick things off with one of our quickfire segments where your favorite magicians try and narrow down their favorite magic tricks, but they have to beat an arbitrary clock just to make it interesting. This week, Kim Anderson joins me for the top five under five. Kim Anderson, thank you so much for joining me here on the Penguin Magic Podcast for the top five under five. Give me your top five tricks in under 5 minutes, but these can be in no particular order. But just for the sake of order, let's start out with number five.
Let's start out with number five. That's great. Well, number five is actually cheating a little bit because through the years, it's become a mashup of two different routines. Mm-hmm. So Recap by Gregory Wilson, an impromptu pen and cap routine from his off-the-cuff, I'm about to say DVD, but actually from his VHS tape originally when I saw it. That's how old I am, and I'm not saying anything else. So that routine was mind-blowing to me when I saw that the first time and saw how much you can get out of a single prop that everyone has lying around. And then years later, Rune Klein, he put out his impromptu hitman routine. I think it was on Talk About Tricks by Joshua J. or something like that. And those two, they've just been meshed together in my repertoire. So I can't separate them anymore. But magic with a Sharpie, that's impromptu. That's just,
I totally, that's number five. I'm always surprised when I meet someone who doesn't know that trick, because I also learned Recapped from a Gregory Wilson lecture when I was a student in Toronto, and he just came to lecture. And I've probably been doing that trick for 15 years now, because it's, and it kills people when they see it. I was just, anytime I see a big pen and I'm asked to do some magic, I immediately reach for that big pen. Because if you've never familiar with the routine, the cap like vanishes, it reappears, the pen vanishes and reappears, the cap jumps to either ends. It's really good, and it's all impromptu. Well, those are two fantastic tricks. Let's move on to number four.
Yeah, let's go to, but this is in no particular order, but David Williamson's, I think he calls them the gold cups in his book, Williamson's Wonders, the one he won the IBM thing with.
Yeah, it's the coffee cup routine, right? The
No, not a coffee cup. Oh, that's amazing. I didn't even think about that. Oh, no, but it's his cups and balls routine with the two cups. He does it on Masters of Magic or whatever, where he does it with coffee cups. Yeah, that's true. With the strawberries and... With the big final load. That routine,
I know the routine you're talking about. It's David Williamson's cups and balls that he won the IBM gold cups with, which is they don't give out the gold cups all the time. So it's an amazing routine. It's incredible. Yes, that is everything in Williamson's Wonders is really good. But cups and balls.
And it is. If I ever get a chance to do a second, what's it called? Island thing.
Oh yeah, the Desert Island Magic books. Yeah,
yeah. Williams then I think I'm going to mention that. You should definitely get that book. Yeah, but that routine is so great because with the regular magician's cups and balls cups, it's an amazing routine. But how he does it with the coffee cups is amazing. Now you threw me off for a second because I just remembered the other coffee cup routine that Williamson does, where he has a cup and a saucer.
Yes.
And he has people clean them, and then he makes salt disappear, and then it ends up, or sugar disappear, and it ends up in the cup that they're holding above their head. It's also an amazing routine. Yeah.
Well,
he's a beast.
Everything Dave Williamson does is awesome. Let's move on to number three.
Yeah, that has to be Henry Harrius's Venom Cube. I love Venom Cube. I really want to be one of those magicians that say I only perform original magic in my act, but I can't keep that out of my act. That's just it's amazing. Like people, how people react to that is just I love that. Venom Cube, amazing.
it's an incredible. If you've never seen it, the Venom Cube is basically. The only way I can think of to describe it without really giving it away is it's a modular Rubik's Cube shell. Like it's like if a Rubik's Cube was a transformer is the only way to describe it, because it's amazing. And you can do all kinds of cube matching stuff, solves with it, incredible things. Love Venom Cube. Let's move on to number two.
Number two. That has to be Silver Etch by me. I need to put this in here. And I know I feel a little bit dirty doing it, but Silver Etch is a thing that I carry on me every single day. I've put out Silver Etch 1 and 2. And there's so many routines and slides on these projects that I just love performing. If you've ever seen me perform anything with the magnetic coins, you know how I get like a little child whenever I bring them out, and I use them for so many things. So yeah, so definitely Silver Edge.
It's a really Silver Edge is a really cool prop, and the fact that you can perform really cool coin magic with these incredibly magnetic coins is neat. But also the fact that you can use them as a magnetic holdout when they're not in play, it's a really versatile thing, and I totally understand why it makes your list. Let's move on to number one.
Yeah, that's one of my own again. I'm going to put the Shrapnel on here. And Shrapnel is a fingering and safety pin penetration effect. And it's, yeah, it's an everyday carry for me. I have it in my pocket every single day. I perform it as often as I perform magic. For me, it's like one of these pet things that I've been carrying around for so many years now and working on, and I just love the reactions I get using a routine like that.
I think what's interesting about this list is that you sort of bookended it with two things where it's shocking how much magic you can get out of them. Because just like we talked about Recap, where there's an incredible amount of magic that you can get out of a Bic pen, there is so much magic that comes out of the Shrapnel routine with the ring penetrating the safety pin and coming off, and it's such a well thought out routine, and I understand why it makes the list. I understand why you sort of saved kind of the best for last a little bit.
Thanks, man.
Well, those are five great tricks. Kim Anderson, thanks so much for joining us on the Top 5 Under 5.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks to Kim for joining me on the show. I'm super excited to be hosting Kim in Columbus this week, and if you want to see his live show, go to p3magictheater.com to see if you can score some tickets to his live performance in our gorgeous theater. Now, on to the main event. This is an interview that has been a long time coming. Harrison Greenbaum was one of the earliest interviews I did for the show, but it was at the end of a very long trip to Magic Live, and my brain just shut off the moment the microphones turned on. It was a lot of fun to joke around with him, but I didn't get to talk about what he was actually doing. This week, I was able to grab a few moments of his time and talk to him about what it's like to star in a Cirque du Soleil show. His position is incredibly unique, as he is one of the very few entertainers to, well, perform his actual act in the middle of a Cirque show. This is a look inside the wonderfully weird world of one of the most unusual shows Cirque du Soleil has running right now. Our guide is the hysterical Harrison Greenbaum, and now you get to join our conversation. Harrison Greenbaum, thanks so much for joining me back on the Penguin Magic Podcast. Again, I'm talking to you while you're in Las Vegas, where you are now a part of a Cirque show, which is frankly insane.
Yes, it was a whirlwind. I'm the first ever stand-up comedian in a Cirque du Soleil show, the first comedy magician, and the first magician they've enjoyed working with.
So you're at the New York Casino, correct?
Yes. And I moved from actual New York to New York, New York. And for the first month of the show, I lived in New York, New York. And so I moved from New York to a simulation of New York, which is definitely going to there's definitely psychological repercussions. There's got to be.
I mean, I feel like most apartments in New York also have a roller coaster going through them. So I'm sure there was like little things from home that were normal.
Well, the idea that people are screaming outside of my window, that did make me feel like home.
Now, the New York Hotel and Casino had another Cirque show in it, Zoomanity, and that went away. And now this new one is called Big Apple. Am I correct?
Mad Apple.
Can you describe this new show? And I want to get to your part in it a little bit later, because I've seen almost every Cirque show. I'm a huge fan of Cirque shows. And finding out there's a talking bit that you can like understand in English is just blows my mind.
Yes. I mean, I feel like every Cirque show is its own kind of drug, right? Like Mysterium feels like mushrooms. I feel like Love is like an acid trip. We're cocaine. We are nonstop. It's supposed to be the wildest night out in New York City. And it really feels like you're running all over Manhattan and you're seeing just crazy things. Boom, 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 boom. And my part is comedy. New York is famous for its comedy scene.
Yeah.
The Comedy Cellar is located in New York. So many amazing comedy clubs are located in New York. And so they wanted to bring this feeling of being in a New York comedy club, an uncensored, how you would see it in New York. And so that's the part that I come in.
How much of an honor is it to have somebody like an organization like Cirque come to you and go, look, we want an authentic New York comedy vibe. you're it? I mean, because they could have chosen anyone, and but to go to you specifically is, I mean, that's got to, I mean, that had to be kind of overwhelming, apart from, you know, getting involved with Cirque at all, let alone that being the reason they asked you to join.
Yeah, it's frankly insane. Every morning when I go to work, I'm like, I can't believe they let me do this. I recently talked to the president and senior vice president at Cirque for Las Vegas, and I just thanked them profusely for the opportunity to just say what I want to say. It's unbelievable. I think it is really a tribute. Now that I'm inside Cirque and seeing how the, you know, it is a company. It's a very large company, but their main thing is creativity, art. There's a staff clown at the office in Montreal, which is the greatest thing. She interrupts meetings sometimes. There's a staff clown. That idea that the art is what's the most important thing really came through in like a decision like that. Yeah. Of like, hey, we want it to be near comedy. Mm-hmm. And so this is, and the plan too was Zoomanity was an adults only show.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was a one-to-one thing, but we're the only adults only Las Vegas Cirque show.
Oh, that's awesome.
Maybe the only one in the world, actually. But we're for 16 and over. It says it on the website. It says it on the tickets. So that gives me a lot more freedom, obviously, to do what I, you know, to be uncensored and to really give that New York comedy feel. But the crazy thing too is the way I got into the show is I was flying in from North Carolina. I'd just been in Vegas actually, doing a convention for Scoop Fest. It was amazing. But then I flew back to New York, did a couple of gigs in New York, flew to North Carolina for a one-nighter. I'm flying back. I'm taking the bridge into Manhattan, which is always really fun.
Yeah.
And I get a call saying, hey, can you be here tomorrow? We need a fill-in for basically our first preview performance with an audience. Mm-hmm. We need you. Can you be here? So I was on a plane at 7 a.m. the next day. I got 3 hours of rehearsal. Most of that rehearsal was me going up and down in the elevator and then being like, this is how all the ways you can die or lose limbs. So don't do that. So it was like, hey, that's a big screw. If your finger goes there, no more finger. That's another big screw. If an arm goes there, no more arm. This thing will stop the elevator, but you will lose anything that's already in the elevator. So that was a whole, and the funny thing too is Otis made that elevator, but the two main companies are Otis and Schindler. Mm-hmm. So I was like, thank God I'm not at risk from Schindler's lift.
Oh God, this is, I'm really upset that I just realized this entire interview was one giant setup for a Schindler's List joke from you.
100%. You know what? My whole career is a setup for one long Schindler's List joke. My whole life, from my grandparents surviving the Holocaust up until now, it was all a setup for this one moment.
So you fly in to act as a fill-in. So presumably there was another comic before you, and
at the beginning of our run, we had basically four comics. There was a Paul DeBeck did a bit before the show as a pre-show, and then a bit in the show.
Okay.
We had Chris Turner, was a rap guy, a freestyle rapper, Brad Williams, comedian, mm-hmm. and then myself. So there's basically four of us, and at this point in the show, I'm the last comic standing, which is all intentional stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like, everybody has touring, and I think Cirque also understands with comedy, like, people need to go on the road and all that kind of stuff. But like, I flew in on the first day, did the show, didn't know if I was gonna be needed other than that.
Yeah.
Then they said, hey, can you stay for one more day? Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, I could, sure. So I stayed for one more day. And they said, you know what, why don't you just stay for the rest of the week? And I said, okay, I bought 3 pairs of underwear and we're at day 3, but sure, I'll figure it out. So I got to the end of the week and then they said, all right, we have a couple of rehearsals. There are no performances for the next 4 days. So I said, I need to go back to New York. They said, all right, we're going to send you a contract. And I was like,
wow.
So by the time I got back in New York, there was already a contract. And by the time I got on a plane 4 days later, I had signed the contract and I was, it was all very, very fast. It was a total whirlwind. And then, basically a week later, I was in the show and I'm here for at least a year.
That's amazing. How does your act changed from what you are known for on the road to what you were doing in Cirque? I mean, because I have to imagine there's some differences. Did you tailor it all to the show?
Sorry to interrupt, but this week the show is brought to you by Red Card from Roberto Joby. Nick LaCapo joined me via Zoom to talk about this showstopper of a card trick.
Nick, we're talking about a living legend in card magic right now. He's had a huge influence on not just my work, but all of card magic. And
This trick is something that he's closed his show with for a long time. We're talking about Red Card by Roberto Joby.
It's an awesome trick.
So good.
Yeah, and you know, anytime that Roberto is going to release a polished piece of magic, I think if you do any sort of performances, you have to take a look at it because you know that when you get this, it is complete, right? This is a thing that you can learn and then just start performing, drop it in your show and start doing it right away. What happens is you bring out a glass with a single red back card in it, and you don't show what the face of that card is. Then you also have a blue deck of cards, right? You can show it on the front and the back. You place the red card on the top of the blue deck and then cut it a few times into the center. From there, you place the blue deck into the glass and out of your hands, right? And it's kind of nice too when you think about it, like the deck is like being displayed vertically in this position. So it's designed for stand-up. The audience then selects a card, and what they choose is what they get. This is, and we can talk about this in a minute, but this is like really where I think a lot of the meat of this routine is, like the real awesome stuff that you're going to learn in this tutorial exists in this space, because you're going to have multiple people named red or black, you know, hearts, spades, clubs, that style of thing, getting most of the audience, you know, involved, which is really, really cool. The audience, whatever they choose is what they get. So let's just say they say the seven of clubs in this case. You take the blue deck out of the glass, you spread through, you remove the seven of clubs, and the seven of clubs from that blue deck is the red card that you placed in it at the beginning of the routine.
It's amazing.
Yeah, especially because that card is not forced. You know, it's whatever the audience says is what the card is. There's no like sticky cards or something like that. The card can be examined, the red card. You can hand it out at the end of the trick, and the blue deck can be shown on the front and back.
It's a really, really interesting trick. I mean, and the power level on this is very high. Like I said earlier, Roberto has closed his show with this for years. And one of the great things about this is the selection process is really interesting. This is a true masterclass into some of the brilliant thinking that goes into Roberto's effects.
Yeah, if you're familiar with, like, I think technically, I think you have to say that this is like a limited selection.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like, it's so weird because it's not.
Yeah.
I remember doing a deep dive on this, trying to figure out the best way to explain it, you know, in a demo video here. And, you know, I wanted to, because really the audience has the choice of any card, but they don't, because his scripting and his knowledge in this area is so good. There's new information here that you're not aware of. It's cheat codes, right? Like they can't choose any card, even though they are fully aware that they feel like they have a choice of any card. And it even like, it doesn't even make, you'll see in the thing, like it's pretty fascinating. Not only are you learning like verbal techniques, but like physical, psychological techniques in this routine about where you're standing and why you're saying things. It's very cool. Some like School of Tamariz type things.
You know, and you get a bonus routine with a gimmick for an alternate version of Red Card that Roberto has been lecturing on for years. But when you compare these two, like the main routine is just so, so good and so strong. I mean, this is something that you're going to put into your stand-up act, or you're going to take to your local magic club and you're going to fool the daylights out of your buddies. It is an awesome, awesome trick.
Yep.
Red Card by Roberto Joby. Check it out.
That was Red Card by Roberto Joby, available at penguinmagic.com. As always, our sensational listeners receive 25% off the featured product of the week when they enter that special discount code at checkout. This week, that code is CRIMSON. That's CRIMSON, CRIMSON, for 25% off Red Card by Roberto Joby when you enter that special discount code at checkout. That code is only good for Red Card and only good until the next episode of this show airs. Now, back to my conversation with Harrison Greenbaum.
Basically a week later, I was in the show and I'm here for at least a year.
That's amazing. How does your act changed from what you are known for on the road to what you were doing in Cirque? I mean, because I have to imagine there's some differences. Did you tailor it all to the show, or is it, I mean, talk to me about that.
Yeah, I don't think it is actually different. I mean, it's obviously, I'm working with the audience. It's a Las Vegas audience.
Yeah.
There's lots of jokes about being in a Cirque show, which would not work, not in a Cirque show. So I'm making fun of where I am and what I'm doing. But it's really it's pure and unfiltered. It's me doing excerpts from, what just happened, doing two tricks from my show and then a whole bunch of stand up and crowd work. So it's been unbelievably fun. It's such a blast.
It's amazing. Well, this is a magic podcast. And so if I just talk to you about stand up comedy all the time, I'm going to get hate mail from the listeners. So you do magic in the show as well.
I do magic in the show. Yes, absolutely. We also have Florian does magic in the show as well. He was a guy from The Illusionist as well. He's fantastic. And TJ Salta is another magician in the show. He does a secret pre-show show at the Forbidden Apple, we call it. So there's a secret show before a show that's so secret I just told you about it.
There's no way you can find out about this in TripAdvisor or Yelp or any of those places.
If you do show up early, you got that secret show to find out. There's like pre-show games. It's really cool. It's definitely worth being there half hour early at least when you see Matt Apple.
I feel like every Cirque show has some, like, you should show up early to every Cirque show because there's some sort of like insane. I don't remember what show it is, but I remember being convinced that someone was thrown into a pit, like they'd thrown an audience member into a pit. And I was like,
I think that's Ka.
I think it is Ka. And that was, I was just like, first, I was terrified. And second of all, I was like, oh, this is a bit. And then I was like, oh, this is the best bit I've ever seen. But getting early to a Cirque show was amazing. What kind of magic are you doing in the show?
I'm doing two of my signature bits. I'm doing Fuck You Card Trick is in there.
Hell yeah.
And my baby closer is in there. So that's but also the other thing is I have the freedom to swap things out. So I'm always rotating in material. And I try to keep it fresh because I think one of the things is we want people to come back more than once. We want people to feel like they can keep coming to the show and always see something different.
That seems, I mean, I don't really think of a Cirque show as like an organic, sort of like a living organism, right? Like, I feel like they set it up and maybe there's like some things that change, but by and large, it's always the same. But this sounds like a very, very different approach to a Cirque show. Like, I was in, like, as we're recording this, I was in Vegas last weekend. I was across the street from you at the Luxor, and I'm like really pissed that I didn't go see it now.
Oh my gosh, yes, you got to see it. Oh, you'll love it. And everybody in the show is incredible. Like, we have a hair hang act. We have a carrying games. We have all the, like, the best Cirque acrobatics that, what Cirque is known for. You're going to get that. The dancing and singing. We have a full band. The show definitely is an outlier in the sense that all the our music is contemporary and recognizable. Mm-hmm. There's no Cirque-ish. They're singing Billy Joel and Alicia Keys and Bruno Mars. The band is killer and live. It's really cool. I think one of the reasons it's different, I think, is it was a collaboration between The Works and Cirque du Soleil. Okay. So The Works is the company that did The Illusionist.
Yeah.
They also did The Unbelievables, which I was part of. Mm-hmm. Cirque bought The Works, I think in 2019. It was like before the pandemic. So this was a show that The Works was involved with. So also their DNA is in it as well. So I think that is one of many reasons it feels different. And also it was intentionally different. I think Cirque realizes they have six shows in Las Vegas. So it's important that they all feel different and respond to different parts of the market. It's really cool to be in a show that is geared towards adults. It's a tribute to the greatest city in the world, New York. Although Las Vegas is pretty good, I'll tell you that. It's very nice.
What's it like moving from New York to Las Vegas? I have to imagine that that's very different. I mean, you told me that you were staying at the New York hotel for a while when you moved to Vegas, but you've been on the road a lot, so that was probably pretty normal for you.
Yeah, I don't mind staying in a hotel. You start to get a little bit loopy because you're like staying in a casino where it's endless day and there's constant, it can be sensory overload to a degree. But I'm in, this is my office that I'm in.
I love it.
I have an office. It is not also my kitchen or living room. It is a separate room in the house that is just an office. So that's a thing a New Yorker rarely gets to say.
Are you headed back out on the road at all while you're doing Cirque? Like, because I know that you toured festivals and clubs and theaters like all across the country doing things with The Works, like you mentioned, like with Illusionists and shows like that. So are you just full-time Cirque now, or are there people, are you going to pop up at any conventions or anything like that that people can see you at?
I think I am going to be popping up. We do our show Fridays through Tuesday, two shows a night.
Okay.
So it's 10 shows a week. Go to madapplv.com or Cirque du Soleil. But we we have dark days. So Wednesdays and Thursdays are off. I'm usually running around trying to pop in, mm-hmm. doing surprise appearances to work on material and stuff at different comedy clubs locally. And then we have on the off weeks, I'm back on tour. So I think in October I might be popping up and doing a bunch of things in New York. But yeah, so the weeks that I'm in the show, I'm here.
Yeah.
And then the weeks that we're all dark, I'm back on the road.
Now, I have a very important question that I think a lot of the listeners will be curious about is, are you still involved in the scam?
The scam?
Yes.
That sounds like a very secret and prestigious organization that no one has ever, I mean, it just sounds so lofty, and it would be an honor to be part of such a secret organization. I believe if, you know, just rumors, there's rumors, whispers, that it might still be going in New York, okay. and that magicscam.com is the website. These are rumors that, you know, people have spread, gypsies, fortune tellers, people posing as homeless people. You know, there's a network of spies and ne'er-do-wells who have mentioned it.
But you can neither confirm nor deny that you are still involved in the scam or plotting some sort of secret magic organization and a takeover of the world as a result of that?
You know, if I was part of a takeover, a secret sinister takeover of the world, I probably would not announce it on a podcast, but I would be very proud to be a part of it and very excited about what's coming.
Well, Harrison Greenbaum, thanks so much for taking some time out of your day to talk to me about the Mad Apple, about Mad Apple and a bunch of other things that you definitely can't talk about. I really appreciate having you on the podcast.
Thank you so much. So good to see you, man.
That's going to do it for this week, kids. Thanks so much to Harrison Greenbaum for joining me on the show, and thanks to you for listening. You know, I was in Vegas a few weeks ago on vacation with a close friend of mine, and after this interview, I truly regret not going to see Mad Apple. The show sounds amazing, and the next time I'm in Vegas, I'm going to make it a point to go see the show. Next week is our last episode for Season 3 before we get into Season 4, and I just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for listening. Every time I go to a convention or perform at a theater, I always get a few of you who come up to me and say how much you like the show, and I want you to know how much I appreciate it. Putting the show together is a labor of love, and I am so happy that you all enjoy it so much. It's been 162 episodes and roughly 95 hours of content and thousands of messages from listeners along the way. Thanks for a great 3 years, and I'm looking forward to more. As always, we're a weekly podcast, so be sure to like and subscribe as well as share your favorite episodes on the social media platform that you have been complaining about pumpkin spice lattes on. If you want to reach out to me about anything on this week's show, you can get me an all-expenses-paid trip to Las Vegas to see Mad Apple. I would very much like to go back there, please, and thank you. But if purchasing your favorite podcasters a luxurious vacation isn't on your to-do list, you can always hit me up on Instagram at Eric Tate. That's at E-R-I-K-T-A-I-T. From me and everyone else here at the P3 Magic Studios, practice, perform.